What would it mean, truly, to do things by plan, to do things by intention, to truly create our lives? I'm going to suggest these skills that I promised to talk about, and then we'll talk about them. What's the first skill? The first skill, the first essential skill, the skill at the bottom of everything. There's no more fundamental skill than this. And there's no skill more missing in the day-to-day operation of most businesses and most people's lives is the skill of concentration. The skill of concentration. I talked about the ability to focus attention, the skill of concentration. Does anybody here know that you're constantly distracted by one thing and another? You may be doing this, and all of a sudden you're called to do that, then you're called to do that, you're doing this. You're sitting there, you're thinking about one thing, all of a sudden you're distracted by another thing, and you could be lost for 4 weeks. You come back and, well, what did he say? What did he say? Ask the question, how many times do you go away and come back and wonder where the hell you've been? I mean, the fact of the matter is you get in an automobile. You did it this morning, perhaps. You get in the automobile, you turn the key, and you're gone. Both you and the car. You see? And you wake up when you get to the hotel. Where were you? I mean, think about how many other people are driving around totally asleep. The natural condition of man is to go to sleep and become a machine. The natural condition of man is to avoid being conscious. And if you don't believe that, look at the frigging world. The natural condition of man is to avoid being conscious. And what we do is we set up buffers inside of ourselves to keep ourselves from seeing, in fact, how unconscious we are. What would it mean, in fact, if we were here all the time? Has anybody ever said something to their husband or wife? And the husband or wife responded, sort of did, but they were thinking about something else. And there was no connection. Have you ever talked to anybody like that? And you're trying to get their attention and you say, honey, 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 I got to get your attention for the moment. Would you please just be here for a minute? Thanks. Has anybody ever done that? Try to get somebody's attention. And you see the difference between getting their attention and not having their attention. So how would you develop your skill of concentration? Remember the balls of your feet. Now, why would it be important to remember the balls of your feet? This little lesson was taught to me by my saxophone teacher when I was a kid. He's teaching me how to be a great saxophonist. And he's teaching me a very important skill. And he's saying, when you're playing the saxophone, remember the balls of your feet. Now, why in the world would you remember the balls of your feet when you're playing the saxophone? Because you need to be completely there. You need to be grounded. Now, interestingly, one of the most extraordinary salespeople I ever met, sales trainers, in fact, said identically the same thing. He said to me, you know, Michael, I heard you say that, and somebody taught me once, long ago, that whenever I'm in a conversation, an interaction, as a salesperson or anyone, whenever I'm interacting with another human being, I remember the balls of my feet. And it gives me an extraordinary sense of being there, more available. Okay, what's the second skill? Second skill is the skill of discrimination. Discrimination, the ability to choose. The ability to choose between the most important things and the least important things. What I find to be true in almost all the businesses we've ever worked in is that people are spending as much energy on trivial things as they are important things. How many of you discovered that you spend a lot of energy on trivial things, that you can get really heated up about stupid little things that absolutely are irrelevant to your life? I mean, meaningless. They don't matter. But you can spend an incredible amount of anger, rage, passion, or whatever on just stupid little things that don't make any difference. So discrimination is determining or distinguishing between the most important and the least important. And in order to distinguish between the most important and the least important, you got to know what you want. So effectively, in order to be able to discriminate, you have to have an objective, a goal. something toward which you're aiming. That's why I call it your primary aim. Something toward which you're aiming, for which your life has meaning. And so you discriminate by establishing standards. Standards. We don't have standards in our businesses. Great businesses have operating standards. They have standards against which they're continually measuring themselves. Without standards, there's no possible way to measure where you stand in relationship to the world you intend to be in. So in effect, two standards require intention. Without intention, you can have no way of evaluating where you are. It's just wherever I happen to be. And that's the problem with the me generation. Wherever I happen to be is just fine, because that's me. That's what they talk like in California. They were talking like that 30 years ago. It's just getting worse. Who discriminates? The essential self discriminates, not the transitory selves. And the transitory selves are all these little personalities. The skinny guy, the fat guy, Murray, Manny, Jim, Jack, whomever all these little personalities are in you. Anybody know you got all these little personalities vying for control? I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that, I want to do this, I want to do that. Who wants? You want. Who are you? Something greater, deeper, more meaningful, more existentially real about the I that we don't find. The most powerful, powerful phrase I'd ever heard about God. We talk about I. It's Maurice Nicole, a brilliant psychologist, but in a wholly different way than traditional psychology, said God is the eye of the universe. God is the eye of the universe. The center is the center of the universe, is the eye. Who is our eye? You begin to see all this fragmentation come together into one essential I. Who am I? Most important question we can ask. Who am I? When our kids ask that question, we say, oh, shut up and go to work. Go do something. Jeez, don't ask questions you can't find an answer to. Ask questions you can't find an answer to. It's a stupid question. That's what we've been taught. Don't ask questions you can't find an answer to. Why not? The questions we can't find an answer to are the most important questions in the world. The questions we can find an answer to have just limited us. So discrimination, standards, choice. We need to have the power to discriminate between this or that, which alters the way we move in the world. Third skill is organization. And it's only the third skill, because without concentration, how can we organize anything? Without discrimination, what in the world are we going to spend our time organizing? If we can't choose the most important things to organize, then we'll become extraordinarily organized and stupid. Don't drop your briefcase. Organization is the skill through which we convert chaos into order. It's a skill of efficiency. It's a skill through which we turn chaos into order. Without the ability to turn chaos into order, we are in disorder. And I don't care what anybody says to you, as fashionable it is to be totally in chaos, ladies and gentlemen, no one in chaos has produced anything of value ever in the world. So if God is eye of the universe, who am I? And what is organization? You can only organize three things. You can only organize work, space, and time. You can't organize people. So don't even try. You're organizing work, space, and time. So when I talk about an organization chart, we're not organizing people, we're organizing work. We begin to build a turnkey system. We're not organizing people, we're organizing work, space, and time. So you look at the most extraordinary craftspeople, and they're surrounded by impeccable order. Master craftsman that I knew, a carpenter, you'd walk into this man's shop, and his shop was in impeccable order. Everything had its place. Everything in its place. Everything was sharpened and prepared and ready to do what a master craftsman does. Everything had its reach. This is where it belongs. This is where it belongs. He had its place. And so effectively, he put everything within its place to discover the natural order by which I do this work. What is the natural order by which your business must function in order to do what it does with ease, with grace? So organization is the skill by which we convert chaos into order. The fourth skill is the skill of innovation. And it's the skill by which we convert order into right action. And by right action, I mean best action. And so innovation I talk of as the best way skill. It's the way that's continually seeking the best way, the best way, the best way. And you will never find the best way. You can never find the best way. That's why there can be continuous improvement. Continuous improvement suggests that we can never reach the best way. We're only seeking it continually through this path of finding a better way, and a better way, and a better way, and a better way. Why? Because the natural order of the things is to grow. And by grow, I don't mean expand in size. I mean to expand internally, in capacity, in capability to grow. So if the natural condition of a business is to grow, the natural condition of a human being is to grow. And when we stop growing, we are in fact dead. We crystallize. How many of you know that many of us spend all of our time defending the positions we've taken in life? And those positions we've taken in life, in fact, define who we are. How many of you know people like that? Anybody here know anybody like that? They define the positions they've taken in life, and those positions define who they are. Try to get them out of the box. Try to get them out of that position. Try to get them to become vulnerable, to truly open to the possibility that they don't know a thing. Try to get them to do that, and you see what you come up against. How do you grow? Most infuriating thing in the world with kids. Anybody have kids? I just had a baby a week and a half ago. It just keeps on coming. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. This kids. How can a man at 55 have a little baby? Too much spare time. I'm working on my business, not in it. That's what I'm doing. Then I've got a 4-year-old son. Just turned 4 March 9th. Then I have a 14-year-old daughter. And a 27-year-old daughter who just had a baby, that's my granddaughter, and then a 29-year-old daughter who's studying to be a rabbi. So I've got all these kids. Now, I've been married 3 times, so if you're just wondering how my wife has put up with all that, and that's my, see, I'm working on getting it right in relationship. But the kids ask questions all the time, don't they? 4-year-old kid, anybody have a 4-year-old kid? Anybody ever had a 4-year-old kid? You remember what a 4-year-old kid's like? Continually asking questions, and this, that. It could drive you crazy when you're sitting, the kid just keeps on asking these questions, right? You don't have the answers. I mean, you don't have any answers. How far is up? Who the hell knows? Right? You don't have any answers. Who knows anything? I mean, you think about it, we don't know anything. And a kid knows it. It's embarrassing. So these kids are keep on asking you questions, right? And it keeps on going like that. I got it. What? I wonder what the answer is. I wonder what the answer is. I don't know what the answer is. How do you find what the answer is? You don't. You ask another question. Then 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 you ask another question. And that's what innovation is all about. Innovation is the continuous process of asking questions. It's not the process of finding answers. Because every answer you find, ladies and gentlemen, is wrong. Every answer we find in the world is wrong. It's simply a thing awaiting a question, which takes you to another answer, which takes you to another question, which takes you to another answer, which takes you to another question. It never stops. It's a spiral constantly, constantly, constantly. You keep on finding answers, but the answers are dead. Answers are the things we hold on to define where we are. Questions are the things we're asking to define where we could be. So this whole process of asking questions, this whole process of asking questions, why do we do it that way? We've always done it that way. Yeah, but why? Let's think about it. Let's look at it. How many of us do that? Just walk around looking at our business and saying, why do we do that way? God, that looks hard. How does that make you feel when you do that way? Is it you enjoy doing it? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. What questions do we ask? What questions do we ask? That's your job. Your job is to be the primary asker of questions in your business, not the primary one with the answer. You're not the God with answers. You're the one with questions. People in their own business, they're supposed to have all the answers. So they come up with the answer and that's it. Here's the answer. Let's not fight it. This is what we do here. So innovation, 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 innovation is the turning of order into right action. And right action is a spiral. It's continually seeking a finer and finer and finer and finer and finer place. Am I getting through to anybody? See, what the hell does this have to do with my business? It has everything to do with my business. Because that's what you're going to teach your salespeople to do. That's what you're going to teach your managers to do. If you don't have concentration, how are you going to teach your people to have it? How are you going to know when they don't? What is the value-added benefit you're going to provide to people in your organization? Your interest in real things. The only value-added benefit you can provide your people and your business is your interest in real questions. Is your interest in real questions. Universal questions. Huge questions. And how they impact creating a little business here. And how they impact relationship. And how they impact the customer. And how they impact our employee. And how they impact everyone. Everyone in the entire world. Extraordinarily alive thing to bring to bear on a little business. It's just superficial if it's not real, if you don't really have a question. Then what? Let me go back to doing things and the tyranny of routine and the killing field of the spirit, which is don't bother me. We're too busy to ask questions. Questions create problems. What's the fifth skill? Fifth skill is communication. So if the first skill is concentration, the second skill is discrimination, the third skill is organization, fourth skill is innovation, the fifth skill is communication, and that is turning right action out into the world. And it comes from some very, very obvious statement, which is, there is no such thing as independence anywhere. There's not an independent person who exists in this world. There's not anything that's independent in this world. We're totally interdependent. And the sooner we come to understand it, the sooner we understand that it is literally impossible to be independent. It is literally impossible to be independent. Then we begin to understand the extraordinary need for communication, the power of communication, the power of now that I have concentrated, now that I have chosen my path, now that I have organized so that there is more order, more efficiency. Now that I'm innovating, constantly seeking a better way, a better way, a better way, now I must communicate that in order to turn it into the world, because we gain our connection to the world. We gain our own personal ability to expand and to grow by the more people we can touch. So you have to touch people with ideas, because they're the only thing you can touch people with. And having said that, the next skill is the skill of passion. And the next fundamental component of all this is purpose. And the next fundamental component of this is principles. We talked about principles. Those are our values. Purpose is the mission. And passion is the heart and the conviction underlying everything I undertake. So the question becomes, does what I do touch people in a real way? Not my question, our question. Is what I'm doing focused on a purpose that is big enough that it is out of the reach of myself and other people at this time? Is it bigger than me? If the purpose isn't bigger than you, then there's no value in doing it. So if the idea that you're reaching for isn't big enough, then it's not going to attract anyone. But if the idea that you're reaching for is too big, then the energy of it can't touch you sufficiently to move you forward. And in order for you to know what that idea is, and in order for you to be in touch with that idea, you have to be able to concentrate, discriminate, organize, innovate, and communicate. And those are essentially what I would refer to as the skills of being as opposed to the skills of doing. The skills of being as opposed to the skills of doing. Okay, so let's assume that that's true. Then let's talk about four very clear statements related to that that I'm going to suggest you might give some thought to in the process of creating your primary aim. Bear with me. First is, I have thoughts, but I am not my thoughts. I have thoughts, but I am not my thoughts. I will not be taken by my thoughts. The second is, I have feelings, but I am not my feelings. I will not be taken by my feelings. Third is, I have a body, but I am not my body. I will not be taken by my body. And finally, the fourth is, I have a business, but I am not my business. I will not be taken by my business. And finally, then who am I? My primary aim is to find out. Okay, now we're going to get to your business. The purpose of your life is to be more alive. The purpose of your life is to be more alive. The purpose of your business is to reflect that life. The purpose of your business is to reflect that life and in the process give you the potential for living more life. So the purpose of your business is to provide you with options that a job couldn't provide you with. A job constrains you. A business doesn't. A job constrains you, a business frees you. At least the business has the potential of freeing you. Well, the question then becomes, what does this business need to look like in order for that to happen? So we're going to ask you right now to make a commitment. That is this. You're going to buy into this idea that, in fact, your purpose is to sell your business. Your business's role is to be sold. And you're either going to buy it, or you're going to sell it, but in either case, the buyer is going to have a damn good reason for making that decision. A reason that they could justify to anybody else in the world. You hear me? A reason that they could justify to anybody else in the world. Their accountant, their attorney, their wife, their husband, the biggest business expert in the world, simply because this business does what it does in such an extraordinarily productive and innovative way that anybody in their right mind would immediately see it. So my question is, when are you going to sell that business? And so the first thing I want you to write down is, when? What I want you to do is to make a commitment to yourself that in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, your franchise prototype will be done. Your business will have accomplished its mission, which is effectively your mission, which is effectively to create a business which operates more productively, more effectively, preferentially, differentiated from all other businesses like it, and your job is to go invent that business, and the invention is going to be operating and replicable, meaning you're going to be able to replicate it, ready to be cloned. When? When will that be? Will that be 2 years from now? Will that be 3 years from now? Will that be 5 years from now? When will that be? Set a date. Without a date, none of this matters. Because without a date, you can't say, I did it. And if you can't say, I did it, then you'll say it anyway. So when will it be? Schedule a date. Okay, how big is your business going to be then? What are the gross revenues going to be? And if you say to yourself, how the hell do I know? What's the point of all this? Guess. That's all you're doing anyway. Right now. So guess. Create a number. What do your gross margins need to be? What is your gross profit going to be per annum? When you reach that point, what are your gross profits going to be? And you can say as a percentage of gross is fine, of gross revenue is fine. What is your pre-tax net going to be? As a percentage of gross is fine. And what is your after-tax net going to be? Now, I want you to think about this. You're creating a product to sell. So the question really becomes, what does it need to be in order for you to position your product, business, in relationship to every other product, business, when you go to sell it? What is a reasonable expectation to have? What is an exciting expectation to have? You're going to be sitting in front of a prospective customer for this product, your business. And what would you like to be able to say it does in order for that person to say, how in the world do you do that? Nobody does that. Because that's effectively what your business needs to look like when it's finally done. So a way to think about that is, what is the industry reality? In other words, what is the reasonable expectation for someone else in your kind of business? Let's take a construction firm. What are the numbers in a construction firm? 15 gross? Okay. If you do, you said 15% gross in the building business, and you are going to be selling your business in 3 years. Okay. And I'm the buyer. And you're going to say to me, let me show you what my business does. In order for me to get turned on by your business, as opposed to every other construction business or starting my own business, what should those numbers be? Right, to be higher. So what would be reasonably higher? So you're saying if it's 15%, you're going to show a 20%. And if it's 5%, you're going to show an 8%. And if it's 2%, you're going to show a 4% or a 3% or whatever. See how simple that is? I'm simply just say guess. What would it be? You're creating a picture. So if you know that you're guessing and you know that you're trying to create a picture, this guesstimate of what you want to do in order to package this business so that it can stand out in the mind of your consumer, the purchaser of a business, the person who's looking for a business, or yourself who's going to buy this business 3 years from now. What does that business have to be able to produce in gross profit and pre-tax net and after-tax net in order to justify the purchase of that business? In order for people to say, I'll take it. What does it got to be? You're creating a picture of what you're about to create. You're starting out in the path of building a business that's going to astonish the buyer, the prospective purchaser of that business. And if you pull it off, it's going to astonish you, and you might not even sell it. What's it got to be? My answer to that question was that we are going to show a 25% pre-tax net profit, delivering professional services to small businesses at low cost to the owner of that small business. Now that is either I'm smoking dope, right? Or it's a worthwhile objective. I mean, if I could pull that off and the customer perceives that our services are cost effective and our people perceive they're being paid amply, and everybody's getting paid, and I can produce a pre-tax net of 25%, would that turn anybody on? Would you like to buy my business? Okay, so we're creating a picture of what our business needs to look like in order to sell it. You're creating a new product. How would you find out how to do this? What would you begin to do? You're creating a new product. What would you begin to do? You'd look at the competitive products. The competitive products in this case are other businesses for sale. So you'd look at the competitive products. You'd look at how they're positioned. You'd look at how they're marketed. You'd look at how they do business. You'd look at how they're valued. You'd look what their operating ratios are. You'd look at how they operate. You'd look at how they're managed. You'd look at how they're packaged. If you were to go out and create a new widget, wouldn't you do the same thing? Would you create a new widget without looking at all the other widgets in the market? To look at the pricing strategy of all those other widgets? To look at their benefits, how they operate, what they're made of, what they promise to do, et cetera, and so forth? Wouldn't you apply the same principles to any product that you create if you were about to create a new product? Wouldn't you do some market research on this question? In creating your strategic objective, that's effectively what you're really doing. Your business only stands out in your consumer's mind. In this case, we're talking about the person who's going to buy your business relative to other businesses. Nothing's absolute. So your business is either great or lousy in comparison to what? Someone else. Nothing else. So in order to set about this process, in order to build your strategic objective, in order to build a picture of this business that works, it has to work in relationship to someone else's business and what someone else could promise and what a business purchaser could expect to get from it, and you have to package your business relative to that. The most valuable thing you could do is to go out and look at the competition. The competition is though they're going to be up for sale in 3 years. And you're going to be up for sale in 3 years. And what do I have to do in my business in order to position my business favorably, preferentially, unique, in relationship to the competition to have somebody say, I'll take your business rather than theirs, or I'll take your business rather than starting my own? What do you have to do? Do you realize this is the most important investment you will ever make? That this investment in your business has the potential of giving you a greater return than any other investment you could possibly make. And that you literally have the potential of controlling it each and every step of the way as you begin to build it. Market forces aside, market forces have very little to do with most ordinary businesses, despite what we would believe. And that effectively, a small business that is packaged artfully, intelligently, with purpose, in keeping with what, in fact, other businesses can do, is one of the most extraordinary investment opportunities there is in the world today, and that you sit in a position to take advantage of that, and you could take advantage of that in a very short period of time if you really went about it in the right way. But you have to know what you're there to do. So let's think about your business in another way. What is the single most compelling reason my customer will choose my business over everyone else's? What is the single most compelling reason my customer will choose my business over anyone else's? Now ask this question in relationship to your employee. What is the single most compelling reason my employee will choose my business over everyone else's? And then I want you to take the same question and ask it in relationship to your supplier. What is the single most compelling reason my supplier will choose my business over everyone else's? And what's the single most compelling reason my lender will choose my business over everyone else's? So we're trying to create a picture of the end product of this entrepreneurial invention, the end product of this effort. Your job is to create a picture of the business that is going to operate in such a way that it will satisfy your primary aim while simultaneously satisfying each and every one of the four primary influencers of your business. To a degree that no one else can. What is the key to that question? What do you need to know? The most important thing you need to know in relationship to your customer, and in relationship to your employee, in relationship to your supplier, in relationship to your lender, is what it is that frustrates them. What are their key frustrations in doing business with someone like you? What are the things that frustrate them the most about doing business with somebody like you? What is it that frustrates, for example, somebody doing business with a builder?
What is it that frustrates somebody doing business with a jewelry store? What is it that frustrates somebody doing business with an accountant? What is it that frustrates somebody doing business with an attorney? What frustrations do people experience over and over and over again having their automobile repaired? What are the key frustrations, the major frustrations that we experience throughout our lives doing business with people like ourselves? Now, what would a key frustration be? They never show up on time, or they never show up when they promise, or they always leave a mess behind. So, do you get the point? What are the key frustrations that this business you're about to create is going to overcome operationally in the way that you do business? Understand that there is absolutely no difference between what one business sells and another business sells in the main. Nordstrom stores in my country sells exactly the same thing as Macy's, as Emporium, etc. and so forth. The Nordstrom store has not distinguished itself because of what it sells. It's distinguished itself by how it does business. And how it does business comes down to some very essential things. And that is true of every extraordinary business. So the question is, what are those few extraordinary things that are absolutely critical in this business you're about to create systemically that's going to differentiate your business in the mind of the person you're going to sell it to? In quotes, the prospective franchisee. That would cause that franchisee to say, I'll take it. You're Ray Kroc. You're going to sell the franchise. The franchise has to do something absolutely extraordinary, and it has to be able to do it every single time. And you have to pick those things. Which ones of those things are you going to pick in this franchise prototype you're about to create? Let me give you an example. Anybody here familiar with a company called LensCrafters? LensCrafters is a rather astonishing company. It was created by a couple of guys. And the idea behind LensCrafters says glasses in about an hour. Meaning what they did is they saw a problem in the eyeglass industry. That is, anybody who is wearing eyeglasses knows, what do you do? First, you got to go to the guy to get the glasses fit. Then you got to get the frames, select the frames. Then he says, well, it'll be about a week, 2 weeks, and we'll come back and have them fitted, right? And then we may have to do some adjustments or whatever. And so now you're going back, then you're coming back, then you're going back, then you're coming back, and you're waiting blind as a bat, right? Because the only reason you went there in the first place is the glasses you got aren't cutting it. Well, that creates a lot of discomfort. So somebody said, what if we could do it in about a minute and a half? In other words, what if somebody comes in and we could say, be ready in about an hour? Typically, 97% of the time, less. 3% of the time, a little bit more. See, that's the result. The frustration is, I gotta wait. The solution is, no, you don't. You can have them in about an hour. And we'll also position the business in a very attractive shopping center where there's lots of other things to do while you're waiting. Why about an hour? Because that's about lunchtime. So effectively, you can have lunch, get your glasses fitted and made, select designer, whatever, and come back, pick them up, and be back to work right on time. What an incredible opportunity. No problem, no hassle, no wait, no this. It costs a little bit more. Well, that was the result they had in mind. Had no idea how to do it. Otherwise, somebody would have already done it before. So what did they do? They found a way to build a lab right at the store. And they found a way to turnkey it. So it didn't require highly skilled professionals to grade the lenses. Now, I don't know all of the infrastructure of that store. But ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you what they did. They turnkeyed it, they prototyped it, they tested it, they expanded it, and they sold the whole frigging thing for $394 million in less than 5 years. Why? Because it works. They had one result in mind, and they didn't know how to do it because nobody had ever done it before. So what they did was to figure out how to get it done. So I'm asking you, what's your version of that? What about Domino's Pizza? Do you know that Domino's Pizza isn't in competition with any other pizza store? You go in and get a pizza, Domino's isn't in competition with them. Who's Domino's in competition with? Do they have them here, Domino's Pizza? Pizza in about what? 30 minutes. Why? Because after 30 minutes, I don't want it. Can you get it to me fast? Yes. How did they do that? By getting guys with really speedy cars? Somebody had to figure out that somebody wanted that, and they didn't care if the pizza wasn't as good as Pizza Hut's, but they had to be able to assure them that it would be there in 30 minutes. Now, how do you figure out how to do that? Right. They had to be no further than 30 minutes away from their customer. They had to know that, right? They had to be no further than 30 minutes away from their customer. So imagine them, like McDonald's, figuring out what their trading zone was. Who's our customer specifically? How many have to be within 30 minutes in order for us to pull that off? Can you imagine the logistics of creating that business? All in your mind, all on paper, all calculated. Based upon one single premise, that if we can get a pizza to somebody in 30 minutes, the positioning of that, the capability of that, they'll buy our pizza rather than somebody else's. Because somebody would rather have a pizza in 30 minutes that ain't so good than a pizza in an hour and a half that's terrific. And there is a consumer for that. Who? Who was that consumer? Mom comes home from work. Mom's got kids who've been waiting there, and they're starving. Mom doesn't want to make dinner. Domino's saw a very specific opportunity in a very specific market. Due to shifting demographics, shifting reality of the consumer, and realized it had to be fast because those kids had to be fed now. I want it now. I want it now. I want it now. And they delivered, and they had to figure out a way to deliver. It wasn't the pizza they were in the business of selling. What were they selling? We call it services, selling time. So what is it that your customer wants? Ladies and gentlemen, what is it that your customer wants? Forget about whether you know how to do it. What is it that your customer wants? What is it that your people want? There is not one answer across the board, but there is one answer in your business. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm suggesting it's discovering that one answer. It's obvious in Federal Express. It's obvious in Domino's Pizza. It's obvious in all those who've already done it. The problem is it wasn't obvious before they did it. Otherwise, somebody else would have. But the minute you see it, it's incredibly obvious.